Hello, Dost Vila friends, and Adina and Khili. We are up to the 96th session of Dost Vila, and we're going to do some really interesting stuff the next couple of weeks. It's going to take a little while to get back to Tfila, but we're going to talk about some very, very different kinds of things for the next couple of weeks because we've gotten to the fourth mistake that people make that is fundamental to their belief, and how tefillah and avoda and karbanos correct that problem. Obviously, we're going to have to do a lot of review at some point. There's no doubt about that. But in the meantime, we are up to the fourth mistake, and this one is very different from the other mistakes that we discussed before. The other mistakes we discussed had to do with whether God was one or whether there were other forces, very philosophical kinds of ideas, and also things that clearly relate back to tefillah. The fact that we turn to Him and only Him expresses our belief. We're going to do something very, 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 very different tonight. Remember, these various mistakes that people have made over time, and tefillah is supposed to correct, these are coming from the Sefer Da'as Tevunos of the Ramchal, and he lists five different mistakes, and this is number four. This one we're going to expand upon a little because it's really very different and very fascinating. Ta'us ha'omrim, mistake number four. Hamir habore es Yisrael ba'uma acheres. Mistake number four is very, very different from the other mistakes that were made before, which have to do with the singularity of God or all this philosophical God stuff. It could be Avodah Zarah, but we developed a more sophisticated view of Avodah Zarah. It's sort of the idea that there's another force at play. And when we come to tefillah, we say, no, it's all about you. But this is much, much different. Hamir HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Temura. Temura means to switch. The fourth big mistake that people make in understanding the world is that God has switched out. He has replaced the Jewish people with a different nation. He, says the Ramchal, writing in Italy, he da'as goyei ha'aretz. That is the opinion, says the Ramchal in the Das Tvunos, of the goyei ha'aretz, of the nations of the land, ha'omrim, who say, chata Yisrael, the Jewish people have sinned, ein Yeshua salo be'elokim selah. And they have no longer hope for salvation in God, chas v'shalom. The Ramchal throws in a bunch of chas v'shaloms here, but this is, of course, what the Christians say in particular. Kesef nim'as. Karulahem. They called him disgusting money, money that has been rejected, a rejected people. Ki HaKadosh Baruch Hu bachar bahem, v'natan lahem habechira. The Christians agree that God chose the Jewish people, and He gave them the choice when He chose them. He put them to a test. Liyot tzadikim or rishaim, they could be righteous or they could be wicked. Vehem hirshiu la'asot umana'u mimenu yitvarach kevi'ochem. And they sinned, they blew it, they lost their special status. Right? Shiyuchal lehaitiv od lahem ke'inyin suri yaladet choteshi, that God would continue to love the people that He started with. Vehuchrach la'azovotam, and God was forced to give up on the Jewish people, ulahachlifam ba'uma acheres chas v'shalom, and to trade them, to exchange them for a different nation or a different faith, mipnei she'i efshar lahoshiyam, because there's no way to fix. The Jewish people cannot fix themselves. They cannot be fixed. They cannot be helped. They had so many centuries of trying to get it right, and at that point, God said, "That's enough." And they say, the Catholic Church says, that the length of the galus clearly shows this. And should shake the hearts of people that don't believe in the real faith, which in this in those, their eyes, is Christianity. Rabbi Soloveitchik, of course, spoke about this in his famous Kol Dodi Dofeik on Yom Ha'atzmaut, 1956. Obviously, the Ramchal lived long before 1948 and long before 1956. But Rabbi Soloveitchik spoke about the fact that the significance of the foundation of the State of Israel was that it made a tremendous break in this iron philosophy of the Christian church, that the fact that the Jews are in exile meant that they must be wrong. There's no other way to explain the fact that they are still in existence. Remember that the church believes that the miraculous existence of the Jewish people, the fact that we survive, is actually the hand of God, because we are always supposed to be the witnesses to the fact that if you cross God, he's going to abandon you. And therefore, it doesn't make any sense that the Jewish people should still be around. And church doctrine was that the Jewish people need to wander the face of the earth until the end of time, at which time they'll accept Yeshu, and perhaps some of them will survive. Rabbi Soloveitchik, on Yom Ha'atzmaut of 1956, gave his famous drasha of Kol Dodi Dofeik, that my beloved is knocking on the door. And he spoke of six knocks, six messages, six things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling us. Interestingly, central to the Rav's philosophy was that one of those knocks was not that Mashiach is here. Rabbi Soloveitchik, of course, hoped, like everyone, that this would somehow lead, and 1967 would somehow lead to the time of Mashiach. But Rabbi Soloveitchik was very, very cautious not to infuse a messianic idea into the state. That allowed him, because he wasn't focused on the messianic aspects, to show why it was critical, even if it wasn't the end. Even if this wasn't the end of Jewish history, even if this wasn't the time of Mashiach and the Geula, why it was still critical to have the land of Israel and the state of Israel to stop assimilation. He had all these reasons that were, regardless of what it turns into, that it's significant in and of itself, even if it doesn't build into something else. So one of the most famous things that the Rav said was that it spoke against this philosophy of the church. And he spoke about train rides when he would ride, or when he would ride back and forth from Boston, and how the abuse that he would took, it wasn't so common to see someone looked so clearly Jewish and rabbinic. Since then, we've become more accustomed to wearing yarmulkes on trains, although I think it's probably going back in the other direction now. But to see someone who was clearly a rabbi, who felt that he needed to defend his faith. So this is what the church said. The church said, it's obvious you're wrong. Look at you. Look how you're downtrodden. Look how God doesn't care for you. 1948 changed a lot of that. Changed a lot of that. It made no sense. The fact that the Jewish people are still around, you could fit into the church philosophy. The fact that the Jewish people established their state again in the land of Israel, that was very difficult to wrap their arms around. But this writing in the 1700s, this, says the Ramchal, is one of the fundamental mistakes about the way the world runs, to believe that the Jewish people were exchanged for another nation. Kedei levar inyan zeh, he says, aleinu laharchiv me'ever lehityachasut hapratit shel nidon dvareinu. He says that in order to understand this, whether or not it makes sense, whether or not it's possible that the Jewish people could be flipped out for another nation, they could be exchanged, we have to go a little bit further, he says. We have to leave the mere subject of whether we can be exchanged and discuss Ma'alas Yisrael le'umas umos ha'olam. This is a very, very different section of Das Tefillah than almost anything else. It really goes into, we don't have the opportunity to hear him talk about a philosophical issue, a philosophical hashkafa issue like this. What does it mean to be a Jew compared to being a non-Jew? La'achar shenevaseis yisodoseinu b'mishnah zu, once we have established what it is to be a Jew, why we were chosen, what it's about, b'mishnah zu nuchal livnos al gabah et mahalei chabir sugyatenu. Once we understand the maila of the Jew compared to others, then we can get back to this question of whether or not the Jew could be swapped with another nation. As Naskil Ketzad Yesh B'Maisa HaKorban V'Avodas HaTfila Bitul HaDeizim. And then we'll get to what this is, a Tfila Sefer. And this whole section is explaining how the action of praying and the action of bringing a korban, in those actions and those thoughts, undo this mistake. That's been the philosophy. That's what we've been doing all till now. We've been raising challenges, mistakes that people make in understanding the world and God's relation to the world, and showing how tefillah is a statement that undoes, or is an action that undoes that thing. So here he says, the question is like this: could the Jewish people be exchanged? The answer is going to be no, I hope. The answer is going to be no. But he says, first we got to take it a step back. We have to understand what it means to be a Jew. Then we can understand why the Jewish people can't be swapped out for another nation. And then we can understand how tefillah, every time we daven, establishes that idea. The heyach ba'avodasam shel Yisrael yeshna horat gilu yichudu yitbarach ve'enyan zeh. And you could show, then we'll be able to show how davening shows how Hashem is revealed through the continuing existence of the Jewish people and the fact that we can't be swapped with anybody else. Okay. Everybody with me? Anybody with me? Everybody's muted tonight.
Sounds
interesting, no?
Fantastic stuff.
Sounds very interesting, yeah. Let's see where he goes with this. Okay. He's going to ask a lot of questions that I know that I've had about what it means that the Jewish people were selected and stuff like that. So it's going to be interesting stuff. Okay. Yisrael Tachlis.
It's interesting that, like, where is this going? Is it like our connection and how we speak? Like, we have like maybe like, what does this have to do with tefillah?
Well, the good news is that since you don't have the book and I'm just scrolling the text in front of you, you're just going to have to wait, Sophia, and you're going to have to wait and find out where he's going.
Okay.
You have no other choice.
Yeah, I'm just going to have to.
It's a bit of a cliffhanger.
Yes, this is very much a cliffhanger.
Okay, there we go. That's what we're going for.
Okay, awesome.
That's what we're going for. Okay, here we go. Yisrael Tachlis Abriah. Gracious bara Elokim es hashamayim ves haaretz. Right, we know from the very beginning of the Torah, Rashi says right at the beginning, what does it mean, gracious, beracious, in the beginning or for the beginning, bishvil Yisrael shenikra'u racious. Rashi says in the name of the Medrash that the world was created for the Jewish people. Machshavason shel Yisrael kadma l'chol davar brachos. It says in Brachos Rabba. And this is something that even as Jews, we often don't think of it in such an extreme way. What does this mean? We've all heard this phrase, Bishvil Yisrael, Bereishis, for Reishis, the world was created. And Reishis means, Reishis is the Jewish people. It meant that the Jewish people was always the plan. And we're going to have to see, is that the way the Chumash seems to present it? Does it look like the Jewish people was always the plan? On the other hand, do we assume that the Jewish people was an accident? One of the things we're going to have to see is, well, what about Adam and Chava? What if Adam didn't sin? Would there have been a Jewish people? Would there have been a Torah? What would have happened? It's a good question. Lahem nitna haTorah v'taryag mitzvotah. To them was given the Torah and the 613 mitzvos. Lahavdil me'umot ha'olam shenitna lahem rak sheva mitzvot. To separate them, right? To as opposed to the nations of the world that had only seven. 613 dwarfs seven to the point that seven is barely anything at all. It was always supposed to be, it sounds like, a Jewish people. And the Jewish people were supposed to carry the vast majority of the purpose of the world, which was to allow the Torah to be played out in a physical way somehow down here. whatever we say, we also had a different suggestion for the world, that the world was so God could give reward. Well, what are you giving reward for? For doing the commandments. If you have 613 commandments, you have a big opportunity. This sounds very, very chauvinistic for Jews, but that's what the Medrash seems to be saying. It was all, everything you see around you, the vast oceans, the planets, the whatever they're seeing in these new telescopes, all that stuff that they're seeing is for the Jewish people. That's what that Medrash says. B'shevil reishis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the Shemayim and the earth. It's almost hard to fathom what that means. Uvamaseim tola ha'odom baruch hu tikun kol habriya, says the Ramchal, through the actions of this people, HaKadosh Baruch Hu pinned the entire tikkun of the Bria. In other words, God created a world that had to be fixed. He created a world that was imperfect. He created this massive playing field where people could either bring the world to its fruition or not. And he put the vast majority of that responsibility in the hands of 0.001% of the world, the Jewish people. Ach masa ha'umos lo yosifu v'lo yigra'u b'mitzius habriya. This is stuff you got to keep. You're going to have to censor this recording a little bit. But this is what the Ramchal is saying. The Ramchal is saying that the non-Jews have a place, but for the most part, they are not part of this massive game of trying to perfect the world and trying to make the world, you know, a place of perfection and to try to do that. Now, again, it depends how we view how the perfection is accomplished. If perfection is primarily accomplished with world peace, then I guess everybody's going to have to be a part of it. But if perfection is somehow accomplished one mitzvah at a time, then the Jewish people are going to be responsible for the vast, vast, vast majority of bricks that are going to bring the world to perfection.
But if the other nations, one of the other nations would have said, we will accept... Mm. All
right. Very good. We'll have to figure out what to do with that. Right? Was that all rigged? Was that rigged from the very beginning? Could they have really had the opportunity to accept the Torah? Good questions. This is an extreme formulation, but it's important to point out this formulation is not the formulation of Rav Rakovsky. This is the formulation of the Medrash. This is the formulation of the Ramchal. Umavayer inyan zeh b'sefer nefesh ha'chaim. And he points out this is the formulation as it's presented by Rav Chaim Volozhiner in the Sefer Nefesh ha'chaim. V'zos toras ha'adam, kol ish Yisrael, yavin v'yeda, shekol pratei ma'asav v'diburav u'machshavotav lo ne'evadim. Listen to what he says here. This is towards the very, very, very beginning of the famous Sefer Nefesh HaChaim of Chaim Volozhiner. In that Sefer, he explains how everything down here and the whole perfection of the world is taloi in our actions. Human beings can, with their actions, they think that they're a drop in the ocean. They think they don't matter. They have tremendous power to shake the cosmos with the things they do, the things they think, and the things that they say. So every Jew should understand that kol pratei ma'asav v'diburav machshavotav, ma'isa dibur machshava. He always speaks about that. Ma'isa dibur machshava, corresponding to nefesh, ruach, and neshama, the three lower parts of the soul. Lo ne'evadim, are not lost, and they're not without purpose, they're not without ultimate meaning. Uma rabu ma'asav uma'od godlo v'ramo. He said, we just have no idea how important it is when we do a mitzvah. In the privacy of our own home, without full kavana, we do something. Or chas v'shalom, we do an aveira. It's an aveira. Everybody does aveiras. Well, huh? Shekol echad oleh kefi shorsho lefol pe'ulato begovhei meromim. Remember, this is Reb Chaim Volozhiner. We've talked about it before. He has a very interesting view of the soul. That the soul doesn't reside in our bodies, but it's like an extension cord that comes from the way up near HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where all the big decisions are being made in the world and all the things are happening, and it's like a plug that goes down into our body. And he says that everything that we do affects a chain of events that goes through that extension cord all the way up to the heavens, where all these things are, where everything is coming from. Begovhe meromim be'olamos, in the highest places of all this chain of events that leads to things happening here in the physical world, v'tzachtzachus ha'oros ha'lyonim, and the shine of the great lights above us. U'masav ha'shalotovim chas v'shalom, when we do something that's wrong, when we talk lashon hara, when we get angry, when we forget about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Meiniim lekilkul ularos bechet kal. I'm trying to remember what that word is. It's a typo here. Harbe yoter mima shehechru nevuchadnetzar v'titus. He says that with our smallest action, we have the ability to destroy the world more than Nebuchadnezzar and Titus, who destroyed the first and the second temple. Listen to what he says. Ki halo heim lo asu b'maaseim shum pegam v'kilkul klal l'malo. The Nefesh HaChaim has a famous shita where he says that Nebuchadnezzar and Titus did not destroy the Beis HaMikdash, because the Beis HaMikdash wasn't a bunch of stones. The Beis HaMikdash was holiness, was the essence of the Shechina, was a place for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We chased out HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We destroyed the spiritual foundations of the Beis HaMikdash. They came, it was nothing, it was a shell, it was already gone. They just kicked it over. He said that it's impossible that a person like Nebuchadnezzar or Titus could have destroyed the house of God. That's not possible. By the time they got to it, it was already in ruin. They just set fire to it. They just kicked it over. That's what they did. Who ruined it? Only we could possibly have ruined it, because only a Jew has the power to ultimately affect the cosmos and to affect towards the top of this huge chain that brings things into the world. And he says that when we do a mitzvah, it's more powerful than anything that that the most powerful person in the world could do. More powerful than the most powerful person could do to help the land of Israel, to help Yerushalayim. The most powerful individual, whatever they could do, right? The United Nations, Yimach Shemam, but the United Nations, who decided to found the State of Israel in 1948, they did less for the establishment of the place of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on earth than we do when we make a bracha in the morning. That's what he says. And conversely, when we do a minor sin, it has a greater impact ultimately on the world than what the greatest people could do with their hands to try to destroy things that are physical. This is very difficult to wrap our arms around.
So, Rabbi Penner, would you say that there might be some correlation between this principle and when we talk about anti-Semitism? Meaning, if we take care of our own business and we do what we're supposed to do,
we should be invincible. We should be untouchable. Okay. That's right. What he seems to say.
That's what, right. So, okay. Yeah.
That's what he seems to say, that we should be untouchable, right? Ki lo lahem chelek v'shoresh ka'olamos be'olamos, it's supposed to say. Ki lo lahem chelek v'shoresh be'olamos ha'alyonim. Everything, says the Nefesh HaChaim, says Reb Chaim V'lazhiner, comes down from Shemayim. We can impact that system of what's coming into the world. All they can do...
Semitism is our fault?
It's not our fault, but it's not possible unless we have failed in some way. It's absolutely the decision, just like Nebuchadnezzar and Titus decided to destroy the Mikdash, and they have to pay the price for destroying the Mikdash. But had we lived up to our potential, we would be invincible. We would be invincible. That doesn't mean that once we're not invincible, that people shouldn't love us and be kind to us. And they're fully responsible for what they do to us. But he says you have to realize that would we in fact live up to our potential as Jews? Would we in fact fortify the heavens with our mitzvos? None of this stuff could happen to us, even if they wanted to do it to us.
That's just one Shabbos.
What? That's what he says.
Just one Shabbos.
Yeah, this is pretty wild stuff. Shiyu yecholim lingoa sham klal b'maaseim. That's exactly what he says. They would be absolutely incapable of doing that. Which means, again, that the way this is being described, and again, I too find this a little hard to fathom, but we're talking about the Medrash, Ramchal, Rav Chaim Balazsner. This is pretty central to Jewish faith. That which I do alone, whether I say a bracha achrona and thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what I ate, certainly whether I bench, which is a mitzvah from the Torah, is more significant than what world leaders are doing at a summit. That's what they say. Davar zehu omek mashmaos ha'inyan sha'atem kruyim adam ve'ein umot ha'olam kruyim adam. We have this phrase. It says in Parshas Chukas, adam ki yamut ba'ohel. When a person dies in a tent, so there's a certain atuma, impurity that's given off. But that's only true when a Jewish person dies. So the Chazal say, no, you are called Adam. The Pasuk says, Adam ki yamut ba'ohel. When a person dies, he says, no, a Jew is called a person and a non-Jew is not a person. Is this that we have in our tradition, the idea that you can kill a non-Jew, that you could steal from a non-Jew, that you could insult a non-Jew? None of those things. Doesn't go in that direction. Doesn't go to minimizing. But as far as understanding that there's a qualitative difference between what our role is in the world and what everyone else's role is in the world. Surat Adam hi b'tzelem Elokim. Adam means you are in the image of God in the fullest sense. And just as God creates and destroys and God runs the world, so do we. Umemela, we'll end with this. Heim heima asidim lizkos b'chaye olam haba. And therefore, he says, the extension of this is that the next world also. What is the next world? The next world is recompense for what we did. We're playing, even if one wasn't, even if one didn't take such an extreme view, we seem to be playing a very different game than everybody else on exactly the same board. The difference between 7 mitzvos and 613 mitzvos is not a minor difference. That's not the difference between a Kohen and a Levi. It's a qualitatively different game. It's a qualitatively different experience. And therefore, he says, a qualitatively different experience in the next world. Ve'ulam le'olam haba lo timtze'enu umot zulat Yisrael. Ramchal says there will not be in the same sense. We'll see. He says that a non-Jew will be in the next world if they did things, but not in the same way. Le'nefesh chaside umot ha'olam yinaten mitziyut bebechina nosefet ve'nispachat al Yisrael atzmam. That just in this world, just as in this world, we're all serving God. We all are playing this game, but we're playing two totally, totally different games. A 613 game and a 7 game. And just like in this world, it seems that we are here to do a lot more. This very tiny group of people have a completely different mission than everyone else in the entire world. So too it will be in the next world. They will have a place in the next world, just like they have a place in this world. But the core, says the Ramchal, is the Jewish people. V'heim nitpalim lahem kilavush hanitpala adam. Like a garment, like an outer trapping. Ubebechina zu yagia lehem mashi yagia minatov. They'll get good, but they'll sort of get on the outskirts. Ve'ein bechukam shi'eshna yoser mizeklo. Okay, and there's nothing else fundamental to that world, to the non-Jewish world. Now again, we're going to end here. This is very different stuff than we're used to hearing. And there's no doubt that within our tradition, there are voices that express this in a less extreme way. But we're not talking about extreme figures within our thought. We're talking about the Ramchal, we're talking about the Nefesh HaChaim, very fundamental figures in terms of trying to understand this. So that's step one, he says, you have to understand. And again, even if you don't feel so comfortable with this extreme version, let the difference between 613 and 7 sink in. 613 and 7. If we think we're primarily in the world to live, to quote-unquote do good, to try to impact the world in a positive way, if that's the way we view our ultimate purpose in the world, then there's, everyone has an opportunity to do that. But if we believe, and we do believe this, that ultimately our lives are guided not just by doing good and leaving something behind, but specifically by performance of the 613 mitzvos, specifically by getting other Jews to do the 613 mitzvos, specifically to get other Jews to learn Torah. Learning Torah isn't good or bad. Learning Torah is one of the 613 mitzvos. To the extent that our lives are dedicated towards these things, then it seems that we have a drastically different function in the world than everyone else who doesn't have this role. And says the Ramchal, says the Nefesh HaChaim, and Rav Rakovsky will say that once you consider this idea that there was a people that was given 613 mitzvot and that the world was about them, it's a lot more difficult to say that God swapped them for somebody else at some point. Right? If all the peoples were basically part of one mission and there was one group that was supposed to sort of play a lead role, okay, so this plays a lead role, that plays a lead role. But again, once you consider the difference between 613 mitzvot and 7, and everyone agrees that there is no one else who is obligated in the 613 mitzvot, so then you realize that how absurd it is to say that the whole purpose of the world was dropped. Once you say that the Jewish people and their 613 mitzvot no longer are what the world is about, you're talking about a radical change in what the whole world was for, how the whole world can be brought to perfection, what the purpose of the whole world is, makes it much more difficult to consider this possibility that we were swapped out with somebody else. We're going to continue.
What about the first 2,000 years before we were B'nai Yisrael, Israel?
So we're going to have to get into that. We're going to have to figure out, why did it take 2,000 years? What could have happened before then? At what point was there a plan? Are we the plan B or are we the plan A? That's the fascinating stuff he's going to go into. There are statements in Chazal that seem to go in both directions. There are definitely things to think that the beginning of Bereishis is sort of plan A. Even through the end of Parshas Noach is plan A, right? What were those first 2,000 years? Was that plan A? And after those 2,000 years, when the world didn't succeed, God said, okay, Jewish people, take it over? Or can we somehow wrap our heads around the possibility that for those 2,000 years, we were just waiting for the whole world to start? That was the preseason, right? That was the preseason. It's going to be, right? So these are really, really interesting, profound questions that, thank God, he was able to tie into tefillah. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to see them in the Sefer. But Amitz Hashem will continue next week.
Can we say Adam was plan A and Noah was plan B?
It could be, yeah. I mean, they're alive 20 generations. We could be plan Z, you know? So we're going to have to try to understand that. That's what he's going to go into, a question that we've all wondered a little bit, but never perhaps stated in so many words. Right? What was that? That's exactly, Steve, that's exactly the question. What? How should we view those first 2,000 years?
No, so if you say that Hashem, you know, we plan B or C or D, who says we're the last one?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. If there were 2,000 years, so it'd be another 2,000 years. And actually it works out very well for the rise of Christianity, that there were 2,000 years till the Jews, and then 2,000 years of the Jews, and then something else started. So we're going to have to understand where Judaism falls on this understanding of, you know, of where we come in. It's good stuff. Really excited to learn this together. Okay, next week is Hanukkah. I'm going to not be here. No, I can't give it next week. Next week I have to be YU's taking over American Dream Mall. So it's going to be 2 weeks. My apologies. Now, Sophie, it's a real cliffhanger. We're not even going to get to do this for 2 weeks. But it's going to be a little loud in the American Dream Mall to do this. So let's assume we're not. 2% chance I'll just find the corner in the American Dream Mall, but we'll decide in advance if we're going to try to do that. Okay? If I don't speak to you, either way, I won't speak to you before Hanukkah begins. So everyone should have a Freilicha Hanukkah, Lichtacha Hanukkah. And remember that even though they have these huge decorations, it's huge decorations, and we only have this tiny little candle, we believe the candle's going to outlast them all. The candle's been around for thousands of years, and that candle, which they tried so many times to blow out, that candle's not going anywhere. That's the subject of our parak. Okay, good night, everybody.
Night. Thank you. Thank you. Hanukkah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Good night.
Good night.